Hello and welcome to the LCU Coaches Show, brought to you by the Shap Radio Sports Network and the LCU Podcast. I'm Nathan Carcino, joined in studio by head coach of LCU Tennis, Jason Spiegel. Coach, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having me, Nathan.
Before we get into the recent conference matches, let's take a look at the season as a whole. This year, both the men's and women's teams received recognition, making it to the ITA national rankings for the first time in program histories. What does this accomplishment mean to your program?
Well, it's definitely an honor to get into the rankings. Basically, as a new program, we weren't in the rankings at all last year, but what it means to me is that other coaches and other programs know who Lubbock Christian University Tennis is, and to come in top 10 on the women's side in our first national ranking was surprising to me. I mean, it was definitely an honor, to be ranked as high as number 17 on the men's side, also just an incredible honor. And I told the players at the time, I said, hey, congratulations on the ranking. Our job just got harder because a lot of teams want to be ranked, and every team wants to beat a ranked team. And so that little number next to our name puts a big target on our back. But it's a blessing and can be a little bit of a curse at the same time.
Lady Shavs ranked as high as number 7, and as you mentioned, the men slotting in at number 17 at this point, or at one point during the season. And your teams also had many individuals ranked on the national side, singles and doubles. So this season, we brought in a lot of familiar faces from last year, but also some newcomers. So how would you say you noticed a level of play to get to that recognition this year?
So I'll start on the men's side. On the men's side, we brought in 4 guys. We kept everybody from last year, and we brought in 4 guys that can really play. 3 of them were transfers from good programs, and then Pablo Segura, as a freshman, has really surprised everyone. I mean, we had our banquet last night, and he was voted most valuable player on the men's team, and to do that as a freshman, that's big. And I mean, he is one win shy of winning 50 matches combined, singles and doubles. And so having 8 guys that can all play at a super high level, and then we've got 3 guys right behind them that can push them every day in practice, and you know, they want their playing time too, and they deserve it as well. And so we have a deep roster, on the women's side, you know, we were able to bring in a really good freshman in Andrea De Bernardo, and she actually was voted our MVP for the women too. So I made note that 2 freshmen were the most valuable players. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you call a good recruiting class.
That's right.
But also Maria Koroleva, she was a national champion in junior college. She's lost one match this spring. She's currently on a 12 match winning streak. And then we got Krustaleva back, but not for as many matches as we'd hoped. She worked really hard trying to rehab her shoulder, and she had some big wins. I think she beat the number 11 player in the nation right here at home when we played Tyler, but she couldn't quite do the things that she wanted to do, and so that was a little bit limiting on what we would hope to have on the women's side.
Another highlight of the school year thus far, back in the fall, senior Martin Zabamu captured his 2nd consecutive South Central Regional Championship in singles, and even better, he won it here at LCU. So how special of a moment was that for you as a coach?
It was amazing. I mean, he won it on Jerry Franklin Court, court number three. He won the regional without really even being tested. And he didn't lose a set. I think his closest set was he had a 7-5 set in the round of 16. But all of his other matches were he lost fewer than five games. And so to do that without a whole lot of heartburn was even more special. But to have the home crowd and be able to win the championship on home court was pretty amazing.
Looking back at the schedule, the teams took various trips across the country throughout this year, Colorado, New York, Dallas, Florida. How can you speak on these past trips serving as bonding experiences to your team as you got closer to the conference season?
Yeah, I hope they're certainly memorable trips for the players. And that's why we do those trips is number one, they're business trips. So we want to play a lot of teams from a lot of different regions and be battle tested when it comes to conference time. But also when I was in college, the thing I still remember the most is the trips that we got to take. And so as a coach, I'm trying to create those opportunities for our players that, you know, 20 years from now, they can say, oh, I remember that trip to West Point. That was amazing. And remember the guys that you went with. The trip to Florida was, I believe everybody had a great time. We played some great tennis. Yeah, we had some tight matches. We came out on top in most of them, but you know, we got to go to the beach and we got to go to Universal and we stayed in a giant house where, you know, we cooked for everybody. And those are the things that I don't know that 20 years from now, myself or the players will remember much about the matches. I think they'll remember the relationships that they made and the memories that they have.
Well, now, as we look back on those trips, there was some great tennis that was played and a lot of good competition throughout this non-conference schedule. Which of these stretches impressed you the most for that your team's level of play?
Well, just both teams, the way we started out the spring. The girls started off 12-0, and then the guys, I think, were 9 or 10-0. To start off the spring and we played some tough Division II competition. The one men's loss or the first men's loss was kind of a tough scheduling day. We were playing a back-to-back and we played a good Emporia State team later in the day under the lights in Orlando, and you know, they came up and clipped us. But I think that stretch to open up the spring season was probably the most impressive. And then, you know, we get into the conference. Conference is a grind. Like the Lone Star Conference is tough. We've got, I think, 6 nationally ranked teams on the women's side, 4 on the men's side. And so it doesn't matter the opponent. It's going to be a tight match every time we step foot on the court.
Now, as we look back at last week's conference championships in Arlington, first we'll focus on the Lady Shabs as they finished the regular season 20-7 overall, 5-5 record in conference play, and incredible recognition from 5 Lady Shaps on all conference selections, those being Andrea DeBernardo, Anastasia Opalska, Excel Jacquemin, Michelle Troquez, and Anastasia Krustaleva. What have these ladies stood out in your lineups throughout this year and then specifically in this later portion of the season?
Yeah, so I mentioned Andrea DeBernardo. She's just, for a freshman, she came in at 17 years old and definitely very mature beyond her years. She hasn't reached her potential yet. And so for the most part, you know, she played to the level that she needed to play. She played 1, 2, and 3. which is hard enough in and of itself, but to come in for your first season of collegiate tennis, and she competed every single time she stepped out on the court, she competed. And most of the time, you know, she came out on top. You know, I think she had some days where, you know, the level wasn't quite there. But that's to be expected, for any player, but especially for a freshman. For Opolska, I think she probably had our best all around year. She's our most diverse player when it comes to doubles. She's just got a lot of variety in her game. And so, I mean, she and Excel made it to the semifinals of the regional in the fall, and they were points away from the final. They upset the number one seed along the way. It just, and it wasn't close. I think they won 8-2 over the one seed, but you know, they lost to the eventual champions. And then even her playing with Oshini, Herath, we kind of made a switch middle of the spring. They were always competitive, whether they were playing 1, 2, 3. We always felt good about, you know, them getting their win on their court. And then there was a point in time where she had won like 22 out of 23 matches, playing line 5 and line 6. And so she was a rock for us. We were spoiled where we got to the point where we just assumed we would get the point, wherever she was playing. And then, obviously huge honors for Michelle and, Anastasia Krustaleva, being named to the all academic team. Now they only select 6 out of the whole conference to be on the all academic team. And so for us to have 2 on that team, I mean, a third of the all academic players, being Lady Shaps, I think that's a huge honor. It just shows that, you know, that they work really hard on the court. I think that's obvious by our record and by our results, but they work really hard in the classroom. And then Michelle was also named to the sportsmanship team. And so kind of my trifecta of priorities are academics, character, and tennis results. And so I think we kind of hit all 3.
Now in the tournament, the Lady Shaps drew the 6th seed and played a very tough 3 seed in Cameron, a familiar foe from a couple matches before. And you made a little bit of a switch going into this conference tournament at line 1 doubles, going with Jacquemin and Troquez. What was your approach to this match in the postseason, and then some of your messages to the team?
Well, really my thought was we had lost 5 conference matches on the women's side, and in all 5, we had lost the doubles point. And so my thought was, we got to make a change. And if we make a change, it's not going to result in anything worse than what we've been doing. And that's losing the doubles point. And so I actually changed both of our 1 and 2 doubles, just to try to maybe give Cameron a different look. Sometimes when you change partners, there's a little, you know, jolt of energy because you're playing with somebody new. Excel and Michelle had played together last year and were nationally ranked, so I knew they would work well together. And Krustaleva and De Bernardo, both very talented players, so I had no issues with them. The only problem was we only had a couple days to practice together, and you know, obviously it didn't work out, but it, you know, we ended up losing that doubles point. You know, I don't think it was a bad move, just based on we hadn't been winning consistently the doubles point anyway. So and that was my message to the team, was like, hey, we need to try to get this doubles point, because if we get the doubles point, we win the match typically. Going into the tournament, I didn't like the Cameron matchup. because I know I they're the three seed, but I thought we matched up a little bit better with the one and the two seeds. So, and then they went on to win the whole thing. And so I guess I was justified in what I thought about them, but I thought they were, I knew they were a really tough team and we would have to play pretty much perfect tennis to get by them on a given day.
LCU on the women's side, they would go on to lose 4-1 in that duel. But then the men's team had a little longer of a stay in Arlington. They also squared off with Cameron to start off the conference tournament and came away with their first victory ever in the LSE championships. Dramatic fashion as well. Mattia Geddon coming down to line three singles, match tied up. Take us through the emotions of that atmosphere and what Mattia showed to pull away.
Well, I mean, we had played them a week before and it was 4-3 and it had come down to Mattia and Abamu in third sets. And so we knew we were in for a battle. You know, we made a switch at 5 and 6 and ended up getting both of those points, thankfully. But yeah, when it came down to Mattia, I felt good about it because A, he had beaten Cruz the week before. But also, Mattia has been in those situations all season long, and he's lost one match on the spring. And so I felt good about having him in that situation. What I didn't bank on is he wasn't feeling great. Like, he was having some stomach cramps and things like that, I think. And he had bruised his heel when we played Cameron the week before. And so he certainly wasn't 100%. In the first game, he had 3 break points and didn't convert. And I thought, that could be a big missed opportunity. And then sure enough, Cruz goes up 3-0. But then Mattia battles back, gets it to 3-3. And then Cruz comes back, and Mattia goes down 3-5. At that point, he takes a medical timeout, because he's just trying to feel better. I'm not sure what worked in the medical timeout, but he came back and won the next 2 games and, got to 5-5. And then Cruz held to be up 6-5. And then it was actually, Mattia was down 5-6, 15-40. So 3 match points for Cruz to win the whole thing for Cameron. And Mattia defends all 3 of those match points, gets it to the tiebreaker, and then he actually got a big lead in the tiebreaker, was up 4-0, but then back came Cruz to 4-3, and fortunately, Mattia was able to close it out 7-4 for the dramatic victory.
Yep, it was a 4-6, 7-5, 7-6 victory in 3 sets. And like you mentioned, 7-4 in the third set tiebreaker. And LCU going into that had won the doubles point as well. Mm-hmm. So did you see that spark and that momentum start to go his way once it all came down to his line? And
then I never saw any momentum. Mattia was always fighting to come back. In that third set, we were down on a lot of courts in singles. You know, when you coach tennis, you're just trying to count to 4. Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously getting the doubles point was huge. I felt good about 5 and 6 with Pablo Segura at 5 and Blas Ruiz Romero. Both of them have been rocks in our lineup, so I felt like they would get their points. But then we were down. We lost the first sets on courts 1, 2, 3, and 4, and so the math wasn't looking real good there for a while. But Mattia was clutch in fighting back to even force a third, and then to continually fight back from deficits in the third was the key to victory.
The Shaps would eventually see their season come to an end in the conference semifinals, falling to the number 1 seed Midwestern State, but again, didn't go down without a fight as LCU kind of brought it back to with wins at line 4, 5, and 6, coming down to Tristan on line 2. What were your thoughts on this matchup with the Mustangs?
Yeah, midway through singles, I knew we were in it. I liked where we were. There was a point where Segura and Romero were up big on 5 and 6. Abamu had just won the second set at line one, and then Aguirre won the first set 12-10 in the first set tiebreaker. And I thought, okay, we're here. Like, there's a path here for us to win. And then Tristan Vigneron at two also won his second set. And so there were five matches right there that I felt like we could win. Abamu ended up cramping in the third, and I felt like he was in a good spot playing well until the cramp happened, and his calf just seized up, and it was impossible at that moment to get it under control, and he couldn't move anymore. And then Tristan was battling in the third set, had it tied at 3-3, and then he got broken at 3-4, and that put him in a hole. And Herman on line 4 won shortly thereafter. Tristan was able to fight off a couple match points, but his opponent made a really good play on the third match point, and that sealed the deal for Midwestern. But I told the team, and we went away from that with a lot of confidence. I think we will play them again in the first round of regionals. And I told the guys, like, if you don't believe that we can beat them now, like, you should, because we're right there. And, we can play better. They're really tough in doubles. So it'd be a bit of an upset if we can steal the doubles point, but there are four or five, every line in singles, we can win, because Mattia lost that match, but he was still reeling a little bit from, the effort he had to put forth against Cameron the day before. So I expect him to, be in better form, when we play in the regional as well.
So now the Shaps on the men's side finished their record 18-6 and 5-3 record in conference play. Also looking at the conference awards for the men's side, Martin Zabamu claims Sportsmanship Player of the Year, and then Mattia Geddon named Newcomer of the Year in the Lone Star Conference. Also, we saw Pablo Segura, Herman Aguirre, and Tristan Vigneron winning recognition as making honorable mentions and teams in all Lone Star Conference. But on the men's and women's side, you mentioned the accolades on the sportsmanship and all academic side. How important of an aspect is that for you in your recruiting and building of this culture here at LCU?
Yeah, like I said, the three things that are important to me are I want our players to graduate, and I want to have high GPAs. I want players that take care of their business in the classroom. And a lot of times that takes a lot of work, because we spend a lot of time in buses. We spend a lot of time in hotel rooms, and, those aren't the most conducive environments to study, but we also miss a lot of class time. For players to be winning academic awards, that's a testament to the hard work and just the priority that they give to the academics in the classroom. And then I told Abamu, my it's not second, it's 1 and 1A, but 1A would be high character and sportsmanship and integrity and responsibility and all of those things that as young adults I want our players to develop, so that they carry those values and characteristics, into their families, into their future careers and whatever they may do. Abamu won the sportsmanship award last year as well. So it's two in a row for him. And what I told him is that it's a huge testament to him, because he's one of the top players in our conference, and he's the back-to-back regional champion. And for whatever reason, and I'll use myself as an example, I frequently don't like players that I can't beat. And Abamu has beaten up on a lot of teams, in the conference, and for the coaches to vote him sportsmanship award on top of being one of the best players, really says a lot about his character and how well liked he is. And you see it everywhere we go. Everybody knows Abamu, wants to talk to Abamu, is laughing with Abamu. I tell him I'd like him to be a little bit meaner sometimes on the court. and he just laughs at me, it's to be a lot of times the sportsmanship award, and it shouldn't be this way. You know, it just kind of goes to a player that doesn't have a great record, but that everybody likes. Sometimes it kind of feels like the consolation prize. But for one of the top players to win sportsmanship and do it multiple times, that really means something.
Now we have our attention set to May 6th as the men look to get their spot as an at-large bid in the NCAA South Central Regional. Your team made it that far last year, getting into the NCAA tournament. What are your sights set on preparation getting to this point? And now as we head into the summer, what does the training look like to get your team ready?
So we set a goal at the beginning of the year that we wanted to get to Orlando. So, that would mean winning this round, and then Orlando is where the Sweet 16 is. And so obviously step one to that goal is you got to make the NCAA tournament. I think it's a huge honor to me, to have had a program in existence for 2 years and qualify for the NCAA tournament both years. And so that's certainly important. And I like our matchup with any of the three teams that we could play. They beat us in the regular season. Obviously, Midwestern beat us in the conference tournament. But I think that we have a shot no matter who we play. I think it'll be Midwestern. I don't think they'll lose the grip of the number one seed. There's an outside chance it could be Tyler just based on them winning the conference tournament. But I think it's slim that they'll move from 1-3 or from 3-1 just based on that win over Midwestern. So we'll find out for sure on Monday, May 6th. We're going to actually have a little watch party. So if you're in Lubbock and you want to come by, it's at 7 p.m. in the Student Union building. We're going to order some pizzas and just to take time to celebrate, that we're going to be selected for the NCAA tournament. And then what the workout regimen. Yeah. So, this week, with it being finals week, we gave them a couple days off Monday and Tuesday. We're going to get back on the court today just for some really focused practice with the men's team. And then next week, so we don't play till we don't leave till the 12th and play on the 13th. So we've got all of next week, and we're going to hit it hard twice a day. We're going to go from about 10 to noon, take a couple hour break for lunch, and then go 2-4, Monday through Friday. And, we'll mix in a couple weight room sessions in there as well. So, and the other thing is we want to get, any dings or nicks. We want to take some time to get those healthy. I think we're pretty healthy going in, but we're going to work hard and be focused on trying to beat whoever we play. If we can do that, then maybe you can come down and broadcast us live in Orlando.
Yes, sir. We're looking forward to that. But we thank you for joining us. And before we go, we just celebrated all of the LCU sports at the athletics banquet. And with us coming to the end of the school year and you serving as a sponsor for the Student Athlete Advisory Committee that put on that event, how would you sum up the year that was for LCU athletics?
Yeah, I think it was overall, I think it was a successful year. We've got more student athletes in the athletic department than ever before. Baseball just won a conference championship, which is awesome. You know, I think our basketball teams were, you know, as competitive as they usually are. Track is killing it, been ranked in the top 10. A lot of the programs are moving in the right direction. We've just got great young men and women all over in our athletic department. We have a new athletic director. We have a familiar face back in Jessica Pope. There's a lot of renewed energy, I think, in the athletic department. And some of that just comes with change. I think the future is really bright here at LCU. And I think the student athlete banquet, like, it was a lot of fun. You can tell me, I think everybody had a good time.
Yeah,
it looked like you had some fun at the photo booth.
Yep. Yeah.
You looked sharp.
Thank you.
You know,
course,
and it was just, it's just a fun time to celebrate the student athletes. That's what that banquet's for everybody to come together kind of one last time before, you know, finals and before everybody scatters during the summer months or graduates and goes on to whatever the next step is. So it's a lot of work to put something like that on, but I certainly enjoy seeing everybody get dressed up and have a good time together. And then I hear some big news from you. Maybe this is public information, maybe it's not, but I think I'm talking to the graduation speaker here.
Yes, sir. Yep.
So that'll be coming up. Time.
Coming up this Saturday. I know it has flown by, that's for sure. But we appreciate you having us joining the show. Once again, thank you so much, and best of luck the rest of the way. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks, Nathan.
All right, coming up next, we'll get to hear from Nathan Blackwood and LCU baseball fresh off their historic weekend at Hayes Field. All that and much more coming up on the LCU Coaches Show.
Welcome back to the LCU Coaches Show. I'm Brennan Riker, joined alongside the head coach of Lubbock Christian University Baseball, Nathan Blackwood. Coach, how are you today?
I'm good. Fun time of year, so glad to be here.
Definitely fun time of year. I know you're pretty busy as we're getting ready for the Lone Star Conference tournament, but we'll get into that here in just a little bit down the road. First and foremost, congratulations on winning the Lone Star Conference championship. That was clinched on Sunday, the first LSC title in program history. Coach, what does this accomplishment mean to you and your program?
Yeah, it's great. You know, we've been in the Lone Star for, I guess, four seasons now, so to finally get one of those regular season championships was great. You know, we got several in the Heartland and in the other conferences, but to get it in the Lone Star is pretty cool. It's a great conference, and you know, like we've talked about all year, it's anybody's league every year. It seems like, you know, whether you're 13 or 1, everybody seems about the same. So for our guys to pull through and to have to win 5 straight to get it done, that was pretty cool.
And talking about how long LCU has been in the Lone Star compared to some of these other schools, I wanted to mention that prior to Sunday, no school had outright won the LSC, not named Angelo State and West Texas A&M, since 2014 when Texas A&M Kingsville won it. Now in 2015, Kingsville and West Texas A&M shared the title, but since then, it's been either West Texas A&M or Angelo State in this league for almost a decade. And of course, LCU joined the Lone Star fall 2019. First season for baseball would have been 2020. I mean, a season that gets cut short, and then you keep building and building up to this point. Can you talk about what the journey has been like being a member of this conference and getting to the top?
Yeah, that's an interesting stat. I didn't realize that about Angelo and WT. You know, when we were in the Heartland, we were playing them and beating them. It seemed like at that time the Heartland in baseball was stronger than the Lone Star. But yeah, now that it's we're all together, it's a grind, and it's great to certainly be mentioned at, you know, as a regular season champion with those guys. So proud of our team, and it's a great accomplishment. But at the same time, we've talked about way bigger things than conference. So it's just one step in the process, and we gotta move forward this weekend and try to win a series against St. Ed's.
And when you look at the process, you know, Sunday was senior day, and there's probably no better day to clinch a conference title than on senior day and the final day of the regular season. You know, last week we talked about the impact that these seniors have had on this program. Can you talk about how they have helped pave the way for this program moving forward into the future?
Yeah, they're just you know, you think about those 14 guys that we honored on Sunday and really all weekend, but, you know, they've been the main guys for, you know, for a couple of years, and some of them for longer than that. You know, we've coupled with COVID, we've had a couple of those guys for 6 years, and it's really cool to be able to spend that much time with these young men as they're going through their college years and developing and you know, just all the things that are going on. So really proud of that group overall. And don't want to start mentioning names, but there's so many of those guys. All of them we're going to miss, but, you know, especially those ones that have been here for so long. It's going to be different next year without them. And they've certainly done a great job paving the way, like you mentioned, and kind of getting us back to this point. I think, like you said, our last one was 19 when we were regular season champions. So to get back to that point, really 4 years later, if you take out 20, this group has done that and done a great job for us.
And talking about the standard, you know, last week I asked a question saying, you know, how has this senior group set the standard? And I kind of want to rephrase that question, because I think the standard has been set already for quite some time for this program since you took over and 2004, I guess the question becomes, you know, how have they been able to maintain that standard? Because it's one thing to set the standards and expectations, but it's another thing to meet them and then exceed them.
Yeah, and that, truthfully, that happened way before I got here. You know, the standard of LCU baseball has always been high, very, very high expectations, and we've been able to expand on that a little bit. But it just seems like each recruiting class that we bring in, and each member of this program understands kind of what LCU baseball is, and this class is no different to that. And they have, you know, we did go through a couple of down seasons there, you know, with transition and all those things. So yes, getting back to this point has been remarkable watching these guys do that, because it hadn't been easy, and the challenges that they faced and you know, injuries and just everything that's occurred, and to still see them be successful and have a chance to move forward has been really fun.
Well, looking at the series over the weekend, LCU hosted Eastern New Mexico for a four-game set against the Greyhounds. Game one was Friday, and LCU won 15-9 behind Brevin McCool's 6 hits and 6 RBI. And then, wait, I might have that wrong. Excuse me. Brevin, yes, 6 at-bats, 3 hits. I misspoke there. I knew that didn't sound correct, but nonetheless, good outing from him. And then 4 hits and 3 RBI from Jacob Gutierrez, back in the saddle for the Chaparrals, and wasted no time swinging the bat on Friday and had an overall fantastic weekend. How happy were you to see Jacob not only back in the order, but continuing to just pick up on that hot streak that he had, you know, to start the season?
Yeah, that Jacob's awesome. He, you know, he to break a hand and go through surgery just a few weeks ago, and then to come back out and be that good that quick. You know, he wanted to play last weekend against West Texas A&M, and he got in the game defensively, but I didn't think he was ready to hit, so we held him off until this week, and sure enough, he was ready to go, just like he hadn't even taken any time off. So that was great to see, because he's a big part of our offense for sure, and to have him right in the, you know, I think game one we started him in the 6 or 7 slot, but he was quickly back in the 3-4 area where he's been most of the year, and he makes a big difference in our lineup. And then Brevin hitting right behind him had a great weekend, which, you know, if you understand lineups, that's what makes the guys, you know, makes the lineup work. If the guy behind you is hitting good, it's going to make you better, and so that's been really good for both those guys to do that.
Brevin McCool was named the Lone Star Conference Hitter of the Week. That's his second Hitter of the Week honor this season. What makes Brevin such a good hitter? You just kind of talked about, you know, how these guys kind of complement each other, and you know, next guy up gives it's a little more confidence for the next guy. But what else makes Brevin such a good hitter?
Yeah, his recognition of the pitches that are coming. You know, he's such a smart guy. Number one, just to you know, he can analyze pitchers, and you know, we kind of mess with him a little bit, saying the guy blinked 3 times, so it's a curveball. You know, he's that kind of guy that just watches and learns and just can just really analyze things. So his plate recognition is a big part of that, and he's a good hitter. You know, he uses all fields. He's got power, but you know, 2 strikes, you'll see him go the other way a lot and just put the ball in play, and he's just a good player. So it's been really fun to watch him develop, and you know, for him to again, hit behind Gutierrez this past weekend makes Gutierrez even better.
Looking at the doubleheader played on Saturday, Eastern made the Chaparrals earn it, as they had done all weekend long. You said last week, you know, this was not going to be an easy series, and Eastern, you know, played hard every game throughout this series. In game one of that doubleheader, Nate Van Monen had a 3 RBI homer in the 4th, and Shea Bowen had a 2 RBI homer in the 5th. Aiden Alger got the start there, and entering the 7th helped LCU maintain a 5-0 lead entering that frame, but the Hounds score 5 in the 7th to tie the game and eventually force extras. It was not until the 9th inning, which, you know, at that point, that's a full game in a doubleheader setting. The Chaps walk it off a RBI sack fly from Franer Chavez to win 6-5. You know, overall, what did you see in that effort?
Yeah, just staying with it. You know, that was a disappointing where we gave up, I think, a 5-run lead late. That can be a killer if you let it. And I was really worried about that one when we, you know, we left Aiden out there too long, and he got tired, and all of a sudden it's a tie ball game, and I was just proud of our guys for staying with it at that point. And, you know, we brought in the bullpen, and they were able to put up some zeros, and then eventually our offense got on the board and walked off on them. So, again, that's a character-type deal where, you know, you can sit there and just be disappointed and say, man, we should have won that game, or you can stay in it and go win that game, and that's what we did.
It seems that Franer has a knack for getting big hits and producing quality at-bats when the Chaps need it most. I mean, had a go-ahead RBI sack fly in that Sunday game against West Texas A&M, you know, 2 weeks ago. And we talked a lot about him last week, but how much do you have in a trust in a guy like Franer?
Yeah, once again, I mentioned that last week. You know, there's a few guys when the game's on the line that, you know, that you one up, and he's one of them. And that was a situation. We had the winning run at third. You know, actually, it was at first when Franer started that at bat, and then we called a steal, and they threw the ball into center field, and he gets him over to the third. And so now, you've got Frainer with the run, winning run at third with less than two strikes, with less than two outs, you pretty much know what's going to get done at that point. And certainly next pitch, he drives it out to center field and game over. So he's a guy that knows what to do in that situation. Everybody knows what to do, but, you know, he's just a guy that we trust to get it done.
In the back half of the doubleheader, Eastern continued to make the Chaparrals work hard. LCU trailed as much as 6-0 in this game and were held hitless until the fourth inning. I do want to mention this. LCU scored three runs in the third, all off bases loaded. Walks, you know, the guy on the mound threw either 16 or 19 consecutive balls. Have you ever seen anything like that in a game?
No, he's a good pitcher that just completely fell apart really quickly. And, you know, part of that was obviously him, just a mental lapse or whatever it was. But I was also proud of our guys for kind of understanding the situation and you know, doing what they needed to do there. And, you know, sometimes that doesn't always happen. And, you know, a veteran ball club kind of understands what it takes to win, and that's one of the little things that doesn't necessarily show up, but it's huge, just the mentality at the plate and kind of knowing your approach at that point.
The bats did get rolling in game three in the fourth inning as LCU scored four in that frame, capped off by a Jared Gibson go-ahead RBI double. Eastern tied it in the fifth, but entering the bottom of the fifth, the Chaparrals did not look back and end up winning this game 12-9. What impressed you the most looking back on this doubleheader sweep?
Again, because of the first game, having a chance to shut them out and win big and then them coming back and tying it up, you know, I think that where we were at that point moving forward was the difference in the weekend. And for us to come back and continue to compete and end up winning that game in walk-off fashion, it just kind of moved that momentum into the next game, and we continued to, you know, just to play well and pitch good for the most part, and it's what it takes to win ball games.
Then came Sunday, and the Chaps needed a win to clinch outright. They had already clinched at least a share entering Sunday after Angelo went up in their series against West Texas A&M 2-1 after their results on Saturday. You know, we kind of figured that Chris Scholl in some capacity would pitch on Sunday, and he ends up getting the start on the mound there in game four of this series against Eastern New Mexico. You know, how set were you on starting him, you know, starting on that day on Sunday?
Yeah, I talked with Jermaine, and, you know, that was kind of the plan all along, and if we used him some Friday, he probably wasn't going to start on Saturday. So just pushing him on to Sunday, and I talked with Jermaine right after the game. He said he's ready to go. So we ended up starting him on Sunday, and he wasn't as good Sunday as he was Friday. You know, he had a little trouble locating his fastball and didn't have as much velocity as he did Friday night, which is kind of expected, but he still grinded out and competed and pitched. So, that, you know, kept us in the ball game, and then we were able to turn it over to some bullpens and win the game.
He does get the win in this one. Went for four innings, but then after that, the bullpen was lights out. And really, between Logan Ellis and Colson Abel, you know, three innings, only allowed three hits, no runs, and then of course Colton Brown, a senior, got to finish the last out of the ninth inning. But the bullpen was really impressive in that, and of course the offense gets it done how they've done it all season. A little bit of piece of hitting that hit here and there, score a run, put up a crooked number in at one frame, and then come back next frame and continue to score. Just little by little, LCU held off Eastern New Mexico to win that one on Sunday 9-4.
Yeah, that was a fun day. You know, to get all those seniors kind of recognized, and then to win, and then to win the conference, you know, all on the same day. And it came down to us having to win that game, because, like you mentioned, on the other side, WT ended up winning. So if we hadn't won, you know, it's a tie, and WT has the tiebreaker. So it was good to see that and to see it happen the way it did with those seniors and kind of going out the right way. It was fun.
And one of the things that stood out to me is after the game, you know, you win, it gets announced that you've won the conference title. You know, there's a little bit of a celebration, but they're still, you know, watching the guys walk out of the dugout and, you know, celebrate with the guys. It seemed to be still very much so a business first mentality, and kind of reflected of your leadership. But it seemed that you could very much tell that the mindset of this team was, this is nice, but we still have work to do. It was kind of like, you know, the mentality of, we've been here before and now we've done it.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it was. You know, we're going to dogpile if we can get to Cary or, you know, something like that. But it's a step in the process, and it's a great accomplishment, and we don't want to take that away from those guys at all. But it is, you know, this is regular season. The bigger things are ahead, and our guys know that. So it's nice to see them kind of celebrate it in a way, but understand that it's just one step in the process, and we got bigger things ahead.
Talking with LCU head baseball coach Nathan Blackwood. Well, now the Lone Star Conference tournament is set. LCU, of course, winning the regular season earns the number one seed. And how the LSC tournament works is it's separated out into two weekends. You know, eight teams make it. The first weekend is the top four teams host the lower four teams. So LCU will end up hosting St. Edward's in a best of three series, and the winner of the best of three moves on to the double elimination bracket, which will be next weekend. But I mean, St. Edward's, even though, you know, it says they're an eighth seed, still a very dangerous eighth seed. And of course, LCU early in the season hosted them at home and won that series 3-1, but still a very good St. Edward's ball club.
Yeah, and they're playing really good right now. If you asked me 2 weeks ago who's the one team I didn't want to face in the conference tournament, I was going to say St. Ed's, because they had some injuries all year. They're 100% healthy now. They've got one of the top arms in the conference, in Granick, and they're just, you know, they're playing really good right now. They split with Angelo 2 weeks ago, and then split with International. So they're a scary team, and you know, the last time we hosted them in this round of the conference tournament, they beat us two straight. So I think that was 2 years ago. So not the team we wanted to face, but either way, you know, there's not going to be at this point of the season, there's not going to be an easy opponent anyway. So might as well take care of them early if we can.
So, and of course, with this being a best of three series, that kind of changes things, because you've been used to, you know, four game series where you no matter what, play the four, whether you win the series, fall in the series, split the series. But now it's best two out of three. How does that change the approach and how you want to put guys on the mound?
A little bit. You know, in a four game series, when you have the seven inning doubleheaders, a lot of teams will put, you know, their best arms in those doubleheaders, because they chance of getting a complete game out of them. But now you're kind of lining up in order. You know, probably most teams are going to throw their best guy on game one, and then just, you know, try to win each game at that point. So that's kind of what we're looking at. We've got, you know, between Marquardt and Alger, they're both, we consider both of them number one. So it's kind of, you know, coin toss as to which one we go first with. But either way, it's going to be a lefty on Friday night. We know that. And we'll face Gafford, their best guy, for sure. So it'll be a battle.
Could you see a situation where between Alger and Marquardt, do you have one of them start game one and the other one start game two? Or is it just more of a situational kind of thing?
It's more of a situational. We switched it this past weekend just because both of them had thrown the the Friday before. So if we were going to make a switch, this was the week to do it because Marquardt was going to have the full week rest just like Auger would. So, you know, Auger had been going on Friday nights, but since Marquardt threw last Friday, since it was a doubleheader, we decided to go ahead and do it here just so that we would have that flexibility to go with either one this week. And both of them are going to be ready, and we'll probably make a decision by tomorrow as to who's going Friday night.
Where are you going to look out for from this St. Edward's Ball Club?
Yeah, they're, you know, they can hit. Their numbers don't show it, but again, they got one of the top hitters in the conference back. He came back against us. That was his first weekend back in Little. But he just wasn't ready. But the week after that, he started hitting good. And then the next week, which was last weekend, he started really hitting good. So he's a big threat. He just makes their lineup so much better, number one. But then also Gafford on the mound. He's the guy we faced in regional last year that beat us, and he's very capable, and he's beat us a couple times. So we got to have a good approach against him and see what we can do.
Coach, before we go, do you have anything else that you would like to share with Shap Nation?
No, again, it's a fun time of year, so come on out. Hopefully we can win this weekend and host the following weekend as well and see if we can get into a regional and be a pretty high seed.
Well, Coach, thank you so much for your time and best of luck this weekend.
You bet. Thank you.
That was LCU head baseball coach Nathan Blackwood. Come out to Hayes Field for that opening series of the LSC tournament as LCU does host the number 8 seed St. Edward's. On Friday, first pitch is set for 6 p.m. On Saturday, first pitch set for 3 p.m. And if necessary, game 3 will be Sunday at 1 p.m. So get your tickets and come out to Hayes Field to watch your LCU Chaparrals. That'll do it for this edition of the LCU Coaches Show. As always, you can hear the show every Tuesday at 8 p.m. on Chap Radio and on demand on the LCU podcast. We'll see y'all next week. God bless, and we'll see y'all around.